Welcome to the Duluth Vineyard Podcast. This message is recorded from one of our weekend services. As a church, we are a community from all different walks of life who are learning to love God and love one another. We're a place where everyone is welcome, true believers, along with the curious, the skeptical, the wounded, and even the disillusioned. We're a place of new hope and second chances. We're a church where God can be found. You can find out more about the Vineyard Church in Duluth on our website at duluthvineyard.org. Thanks for listening.
Well, good morning. We're going to do something that we haven't done for quite a while here at the Vineyard. Brenda and I are just, we're going to invite you into our...
living room.
Our parlor, our living
room.
Oh,
no.
Our lounge.
You know what this feels like? This feels like The View.
Oh, no.
I feel like I'm on The View. This is Whoopi Goldberg.
I'm leaving. That's it. I'm done. Oh, please. God, no. So here's what we want to do. Because it's Father's Day, what we wanted to do was we're doing a series of messages about bringing Jesus to the center. And today what we wanted to do was spend some time talking about bringing Jesus to the center of our parenting. You know, it's interesting to me that pretty much every generation blames the previous generation for their problems, don't we? Like, every generation looks back and goes, they're the ones that messed us up. And so here's the encouraging thing I wanted to start with. Your kids are going to look at you and say, you messed me up. Like, you're the reason I need counseling.
You're
it's
my
all
problem.
Because of you. Yeah, you're my problem.
Do our kids do that?
They only say that of me, honey.
Yeah, that makes me feel better.
Yeah, I knew it would. And so what we thought we would do is spend a little bit of time just kind of having a dialogue between the two of us, because both of us ended up being parents. I'm not still trying to figure out
how that happened.
But none of us go into this thing with much experience. In fact, none of us go into parenting experience at all. None of us know what we're doing when we get into this deal. But the Bible has lots of really good stuff to say about it. And so we just thought, hey, we'll spend some time and we'll talk about that today. And that will be our talk.
And our kids are, two of our kids are in here and they're shrinking down. They're afraid of the stories that we're going to tell about them right now.
But we're only going to tell the good stories.
The good stories,
yeah.
We'll tell the bad ones about us.
There's plenty of
those.
And,
you know, everybody is either a parent or a child.
Exactly. I looked it up online. I found out it's true.
There are some things you don't have to Google, honey.
I love Google. Anyway, so here's the deal. You may be here and you're not a parent. And maybe you never want to be a parent, or you're just not a parent yet. And... I just thought of, 10 funny things I could say, and I'm going to move on.
Whoop! Yeah. It's good. You got to have that filter. Filter, kick
filter,
in.
Filter, gauga, dive.
Dive.
Anyway, so so what we're going to do is we're going to address this in the context of three areas of character development. And no matter how old we are, these are three areas of character development that each of us need to grow in. And so it really doesn't matter whether we're a parent or not. There's going to be stuff here that you can get out of here that you can grow in. And character development, let me start with this. We believe that character development is really one of our main goals as parents. And the Bible talks about this. It says in Proverbs 22:1, a good name, or Eugene Peterson says a sterling reputation, or you could also legitimately translate this as really good character, really good personal character, is more desirable than great riches. It's to be esteemed better than silver or gold. Dwight Moody said that character is what we are in the dark when nobody's looking. And Plutarch said character is simply a long habit continued. It's a habit that we've continued for a long time. And you know exactly who Plutarch is, don't you?
Why did you have to bring that up? I have no idea who it is.
Well, because most of
us
don't.
I know Pluto.
The little doggy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who is he?
Plutarch. He's a Greek dude.
Oh, cool.
There you go.
Yeah, I believe you. You say so.
I just made
that
up.
No, I don't. We could ask them to raise their hands, and I bet you no one else knew.
I'm sure somebody would. Every time I try that, somebody embarrasses me because they really know what's going on.
Okay, let's not do it then.
Okay. So Brenda and I were reading a book this week. There's a really great book out there that's really specifically geared towards parenting from a biblical perspective. And this book is called Boundaries with Kids. It's written by two psychologists, Drs. Cloud and Townsend. And here's something they say about character. They say, if a person's character makeup determines his, or I would add her, future, then raising children is primarily about helping children to develop character that will take them through life safely, securely, productively, and joyfully. And so what we wanted to do was we wanted to kind of frame our talk today around three important parts of our character.
Yeah, there are like so many things I think that barrage parents as far as, you know, what to look to for help, and lots of literature written, and just lots of even controversy about parenting in general. And, you know, who is there for help? Dr. Phil, Super Nanny.
Super Nanny's funny.
Super Nanny. She knows how to teach you how to give your kids a timeout. And but in thinking about character, the Bible does have some things to say, and we're just going to focus in on three main areas that kind of are very foundational. These are things that, as Michael said, can affect character issues in our children's lives. And so the first one would be that we would really take and pay attention to training our children to be able to embrace reality. And there's a first kind of principle or law that we just want to talk about here, because there's several things that can act as reality checks in the life of our kids. And the first one is sowing and reaping, which God has wired the entire universe with the law of sowing and reaping. And so we can kind of build our life around it, in fact, and learn a lot from that principle. Galatians 6, 7, and 8 says this: "Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. People reap what they sow. Those who sow to please their sinful nature, from that nature will reap destruction. And those who sow to please the Spirit, from the Spirit will reap eternal life." So the positive side of sowing and reaping, of course, is that it means that if you invest well in your life and you make good choices, it's going to pay off. And sowing and reaping can also teach us that we can have a healthy fear of bad things happening, because the fact is there are going to be consequences for the seeds that we sow, and it's going to make a difference in the long run in our life. And so this is really, really important for kids, because they're not thinking about consequences most of the time.
Well, it's hard as a child who's only been alive for a limited amount of time to actually think past like the end of your nose, to actually develop long-term thinking.
Right. And so what we want to do, and in fact, it's interesting when we're talking to people about life issues, or we're pastoring people all the time, you know, you can look at somebody's life, you can see this boatload of bad fruit in their life from a life of sowing seeds to the flesh, and, you know, everything is chaotic and out of control, and you have all this bad fruit, and you ask them, you know, if you continue on this path, do you realize where you're going to end up in 3 years or 5 years? And generally, people say, no, I haven't really thought of that. And so the lack of just understanding this principle and sowing seeds in our life that will bear the kind of fruit that we really want in our lives later causes a lot of havoc, even as adults. Because if kids don't learn this, then they grow up and they still live like it doesn't matter what I do right now. So to some degree, what we're asking, what we're thinking that would be helpful is that kids understand that they have a choice of how things turn out in their life. For instance, if I were a parent and I had a kid whose room was absolutely a disaster, in fact, it was a health hazard. That happens in my family. Some of my kids' rooms are a health hazard. The dirty dishes that you find under a pile of dirty clothes is like frightening sometimes. Did you know that was going on?
Yeah.
But if I want to see something change in that area of their life, then I have to teach them to sow different seeds in that area of their life. And so, for instance, if you told a child, you know, you need to pick up your room, the dirty laundry has to get down to the washing machine so that you can have some clean underwear to wear, so your kids, you don't lose your friends because they think you're stinky. Get that whole sowing and reaping thing. And they don't want to clean their room, and I say, well, you can't go outside until you clean your room, because this is important and it's going to bear bad fruit in your life if you don't clean your room. Then what I'm doing is saying, you know, you get to choose what happens in your life. I'm giving you the choice. It's your choice. If you clean your room, you can go outside and play. It's a beautiful day. If you don't, then what you're choosing is
you're going to miss the one day of summer in Duluth.
Exactly.
If you don't do this, right?
too bad.
And at the end of the day, it's like, well, I'm sorry you didn't get to go outside. It was a beautiful day.
And you can empathize with them and say, you know, I don't like it when I don't get to do the things that I think will be fun either, but that's the choice that you made. And so to just teach them that reality is not their enemy, I think is what we're talking about. And, you know, just that it's our friend, and it's an important lesson. Because when they grow up and have a job, if you don't teach them this sowing and reaping principle, they're not going to know that if I don't show up on time, I'm going to lose my job. And, you know, that there are consequences for not taking responsibility in that area.
Exactly.
So living wisely, making good choices, gives us a good outcome.
So sowing and reaping is one of the things that we have to embrace for reality. Also, living honestly is one of the areas of reality that we really need to embrace. You know, we ask ourselves, am I willing to be exposed? Am I willing to be kind of transparent with what's really going on in my life? Humans, by and large, we tend to not want to live honestly. Unless, of course, it makes us look good. When things make us look good, we want to be very honest about it. In fact, we'd love to exaggerate it. But when something's not going to make us look good, then we want to really hide that. Like, you know, you leave the kids at home for a few hours, you come back home, and your favorite vase is broken. And it's either kind of set back up together, like pretending it's not broken, or it just disappears from the planet. You know, it's just gone somewhere. And you
and
say,
everyone's like, I don't know.
Yeah, you ask them, like, what happened? Well, I don't know. Like, I don't know what
Where's
happened to it. You know?
I don't know.
It was the dog that you're going to buy next week. You know, that's what happened to it. You know, we're not sure where it went. I like to think about it this way. We come by this desire to not be honest. We come by it honestly. Because really, it's our very first parents, the first humans on the planet, who really lived this way. And they passed this down to us as part of our sin nature. So when God confronts the first man and the woman, Adam and his wife, he confronts them about their rebellion and their doing what they shouldn't have done, eating from the tree they shouldn't have eaten. Remember what Adam says? He says, well, it's not my fault. It was that woman you gave me, right? Which is blaming the woman and God, because he created the woman. Of course, that was the woman he was celebrating just a few verses before.
Right.
And then God turns to the woman and says, what's this thing you've done? And she says, it was the serpent you made. It's your fault, God. You did this thing. So we come by this really honestly. That's part of what our sin nature is all about. As parents, we get to help train our kids. How do you live honestly? How do you take responsibility for your own life in that way? You know, it dawns on me that there's no way that we can teach someone to do that when they're watching us do something different. That unless we're willing to live honestly, unless we are willing to say, hey, you know what, I made a mistake, I messed up here, I'm sorry for this, that there's no way they're going to learn how to do that. And so one of the ways that we teach them to live honestly is living honestly ourselves. Another part of reality that's good for our children to learn is that of respect, thinking of other people. Believe it or not, there are other people living on the planet and their feelings do matter. I don't know why. Sometimes this is really hard to teach with kids because we all come out of the womb pretty self-centered. We pretty much think that it's us that matters. Jesus gave us this principle in Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. Many people call it the golden rule, where he says, so in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. For this sums up the law and the prophets. He's saying, this is summing up the whole Old Testament. Do unto others as you want them to do unto you. Love your neighbor as yourself. The problem is every one of us come in the world wanting things our own way. In fact, we don't just want things our own way in our life. We want things our own way in everybody's life, right? Like, I want to be the boss of me, and I want to be the boss of you. I remember one of our kids yelling out, you're not the boss of me. And I just remember laughing about that really hard, thinking, yeah, you're not, but I am. With my evil little laugh.
So evil.
It's so evil, huh? I used my evil laugh the other day. I said, hey, on Father's Day, I'm going to make you guys all go out to lunch with me. Okay,
and they're like,
mind.
If you're paying, I'm all about that.
Yeah, they're like, I don't care, Dad, whatever. So part of our job as parents is to really cure them of self-centeredness, So we teach them not to hurt others, not to disrespect others, not to punish others relationally because we disagree, you know. And, you know, kids need to learn that our selfishness, and adults need it, our selfishness actually hurts other people. And so I thought Brenda was really good at this, especially when our kids were younger. Not that she's not anymore, she still is. But she actually taught me how to do this when our kids were younger, talking to them about how their attitude or what they were doing actually hurt my feelings, actually hurt her feelings. And they laughed when they hurt Dad. You know, when I said my feelings are hurt, they would just giggle. But when Brenda would say, what's that about?
The kids laughing. It was like, you know, yeah. Go
okay.
on.
So, sorry. But it was interesting because when Brenda would say, boy, when you did that, that hurt Mom's feelings. And she had tears in her eyes. You could see that they really didn't want the relationship to break down between them and us. And so they were willing, really willing to take a look at their selfishness when they saw that there was a relational destruction going on there. So, really good. So, I love this quote. I got to tell you this one. Reality, it's been said, reality is a tough place to live, but it's the only place to get a good steak. That reality, it's really difficult to live with reality, to live with sowing and reaping and being honest, to live with thinking of other people. But in reality is the only place where you get the good stuff of relationships as well. You can't have the good stuff in a fantasy life, just like you can't get a steak in an online game. So I'm going to use that one of these days. I'm going to use that. So what we want to do in the midst of all that reality stuff is we want to begin to teach them, number two here, to take responsibility. You know, the Bible says that all of us at some point are going to have to give an account before God. So 2 Corinthians 5:10 says this, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ that everyone may receive what is due them for the things they've done while in the body, whether good or bad. And one of our goals as parents is, you know, in this whole character development thing, is to teach our children how to take responsibility and specifically what to take responsibility for.
Right. So there are lots of things that we'd like to see them grow up and be responsible for. But here are a few things that kind of affect all the other areas of their lives. So what we want is to learn to teach our kids how to take some ownership and responsibility in these areas. And the first one is to be responsible for their emotions. And, you know, kids can be very emotional, and most of us either learn how to mature in that over time and through life, or we don't. And in those cases, there's a lot of dysfunction and instability in our relationships that we're having as our emotions are not under the control of God. And I think it's really important to teach our kids, God made your emotions, they're a good thing. And it's okay for you to be emotionally engaged in your relationships, in your relationship with God, as well as just knowing that they kind of are an indicator. Your emotions help you figure out what's really going on in your heart. They're like the oil light going on and saying, you know, that there's a problem. And so it's not that they can't feel their anger or they can't feel their hurt, and it's not wrong to have those emotions, but then what do you do with them? And that they should really learn to see that it's natural to have those emotions and that that's how God created them, but and also learn to identify what triggered it, what got hooked here, and then, you know, how do I solve the problems that led up to feeling that extreme anger or feeling that extreme fear or whatever it is. So learning that, yeah, emotions are from God, but and they're not wrong, but what am I doing with them? And the fact that you get upset is because God is upset. If you get sinned against and somebody hurts you or sins against you, then that makes him feel bad as well. It hurts God. And so that's why you feel kind of fragile in that area as well. But I think the key is learning that God is the one that can control their emotions. And that our emotions are controlled by all kinds of things, circumstances, broken relationships, soul ties that we have with other people where we've given our heart to somebody, and so it doesn't matter what they do, they control our emotions. And kids can learn at a very young age that Jesus can be in control of their emotions. And I remember teaching my kids this, and I think my oldest was about 3, and, I had one at 2, and I don't even know if Jericho was in our lives at that point yet, but I can remember just teaching them that your emotions can be controlled by Jesus, or, you know, Satan can bother us too, and he can use our emotions, or other things can use our emotions. And so one day I'm having a particularly bad mom moment, And I can't remember what the circumstances were entirely, but I think there was milk, you know, like dripping down all the shelves and onto the floor. And I think someone was climbing in the fridge. I won't name any names. But
you know, that top shelf is high. I could never reach it.
It was you. Yeah, for some reason you weren't assisting. I was alone there with the children in the kitchen. I was just getting upset and having a bad day, and I was getting angry, and I started to express that verbally. And so I'm kind of like, my voice is raised, and I'm, you know, just kind of going to let them have it. Like, this is not okay. And, you know, all of a sudden, Jackson, my three-year-old, is like tugging on me, Mommy, Mommy. I'm like, I'm in the middle of bawling Sierra out here. Now, hold on, you know. And all of a sudden, you know, I hear him say to me, Mommy, I think Satan is bothering you today. You know what it feels like to be corrected by your three-year-old, you know? Yeah. And so we had a moment where we get down on our knees, and I start to cry, and I say, you're right, honey, and this isn't okay, and we need Jesus to come right now and control our emotions, and, you know, just hugging them and kind of walking through that. But they can learn at a very young age these things, and I think it's good to teach them that. The other thing that we want to teach them to be responsible for is our attitudes, and attitudes are simply the way that they feel or their opinions toward people and issues, and the attitudes are going to be the basis for almost all their major decisions in life that they make. And you want them to cultivate the right attitude towards lots of things, like their self, their role in the family, God, work, school, friends, and even moral issues. You want them to develop attitudes like, how do they feel about drugs and sex before marriage and, you know, gangs and things like that. You want them to have some attitudes about moral issues. And so they should work that out. They need to work that out and decide, what is my attitude going to be? And they might not be the same as other people's attitudes. And that's how our kids are able to actually withstand peer pressure when they get a little bit older, because they realize that, you know, the wrong attitude in a certain area of their life is going to bear some bad consequences. And so one of the ways you do that is just by helping them learn as, you know, preteens and junior hires and older grade school children, is, you know, taking a little look a level deeper than what's really going on the surface. So they may come home and say, this, you know, from seventh grade girls, this seems to be the typical seventh grade girl scenario. You know, like, she is so mean, Mom. She is, like, so mean to me. She is hateful. She's rude. And, you know, just being able to come back and say, well, have you done anything to hurt this girl? Or do you girls kind of gang up on her? Or do you gossip about her? Or just getting them to kind of look honestly at what's really going on in that person's life. Or maybe they don't have a, you know, I like to tell my kids, well, let's step back from it emotionally. What if it's not about you? What if it's not about you at all? What if there's something going on in this person's life? What if they don't have a loving mom or a dad or a stable home? Or you don't know what's going on in their life that's causing them to, you know, act out that way. And just taking a little deeper look at what's going on. And then the third area, of course, that emotions and attitudes lead to is our behaviors, and teaching our kids how to have some responsibility about just their behaviors. And people don't realize that children can learn to act responsibly for their behaviors sometimes. You know, kids link their emotions to their actions. There's like a direct link between their feelings and their behavior. So as an adult, like you and I might have some irrational feeling, but we have a filter, or we make some adjustments, and we don't necessarily act on our initial irrational feeling. We have the ability to intervene before it's too late.
Or we certainly hope we do.
Well, yeah, you should have by the time, you know, with some good parenting. But kids don't have that. They don't come prepackaged with any kind of intervention. And so you're there as a parent to give them some tools to build that into their life and say, wait a minute, let's step back from this emotionally. Let's check what is our attitude, and then let's let that affect our behavior. Because you can't just, you know, flip out and punch a hole through the wall. It's not mad that you're angry, but you can't punch a hole in the wall, you know. And just learning how to separate those things a little bit and delay the gratification of, you know, punching a hole in the wall. Or, you know, if you get mad at your sibling, you can't pick up a pillow and put it over your sister's head and sit on it for 10 minutes, you know, or you're going to smother her. And so teaching them that their behavior matters. It matters, and that they can be responsible for it. And, you know, if you don't learn that...
Did you bring the pillow thing up because that happened to you at some point, or...?
No, it just
It just came to you?
Yeah.
Okay. I was just wondering where that came from.
I'm
trying to get
it's
deeper.
It's just an illustration.
Okay, good. Yeah. So the way that we learn to take responsibility for those things is this fun little word called discipline. Now, I'm not going to begin to debate what kind of discipline that you should practice today. There's a huge debate going on about how you do that. Let's just talk for a moment about the importance of discipline. The Bible is really clear that discipline is incredibly important. So Proverbs 19 says, "Discipline your children, for in that there is hope." Or, "Discipline your children while there is still hope. Do not be a willing party in their death." That's a pretty powerful verse.
That's pretty serious.
Yeah. If you want to help them self-destruct, basically the writer of Proverbs is saying, don't discipline them, right? And he goes on in Proverbs 29 and says, "Discipline your children and they will give you peace." That'd be nice.
That's what I'm hoping for.
And I like this part. "They will bring you the delights you desire on Father's Day." Oh, no, wait. The Father's Day part's not in there. So a helpful way to think about discipline is this. Some have said that discipline literally means delayed gratification. To discipline ourselves is to delay gratification. Hal Runkel, a psychologist who wrote the book Scream-Free Parenting.
I love that title.
Yeah.
Scream-Free
Parenting. He said this about delayed gratification. He says, if you want to teach...
They don't think it's that cool.
Yeah, they didn't catch on. If you want to teach your children one skill to help them most in this life, teach them to delay gratification, to wait, to be patient. You know, Daniel Goleman, who wrote the book Emotional Intelligence, subtitled Why That Can Matter More Than IQ, it's a really good book, says this, "The bedrock of character is self-discipline. And as we have seen, the ability to defer gratification and to control and channel one's urges to act is a basic emotional skill, one that in former day was called will." You see, I believe that as parents, God has placed us in charge of disciplining our kids. When you don't discipline them, no matter how you choose to do that, when you don't do that, what you're doing is you're confusing, you're clouding their view of who God is. Because God comes to us, a writer of Hebrews says, with discipline. And so it's kind of a normal part of life that we experience this. And we have an incredible power to help our children understand how authority really works. When somebody hasn't experienced discipline, Brenda and I, like when we work with folks, we really can see that as pastors and as leaders. Because if they don't learn to hear the no of their mom or their dad or their grandparents, they will never learn to hear the no of God. And there are some things that are really unhealthy for us that we need to be told no about. There's importance in that. And so when something hard happens in most people's lives, when they haven't experienced much discipline, what they do is they go right to blaming God. Well, you must not, and this is, I mean, you can hear toddlers say this all the time. "You must not love me," or maybe junior hires, toddlers.
Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going there. "You must not love me because you're not letting me have my way. You don't love me anymore. God, you know, you must hate me because this thing happened in my life." And it's like, well, no, that's just not going to be good for you. That's not something that's healthy for you. And so what happens, and the third thing that we need to really embrace, besides taking responsibility and embracing reality, is this whole thing of experiencing pain. You know, somebody once said, if you want to really screw up your kids, if you want to really avoid pain at all costs, both for you and for them. You see, discipline, delaying gratification, will always, always, always cause us pain. Discipline itself really is painful in many, many ways. So the writer of Hebrews 12, chapter 12, verse 7, says, "Endure hardship as discipline." It's hardship as discipline. God's treating you as his children. "For what children are not disciplined by their father?" Skip down to verse 10. "Our parents disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our own good, that we may share in his holiness." We can become a part of who he is and what he's doing. "No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. We can actually begin to view not only discipline as painful, but that pain is a gift. That in that pain, we're actually learning things. It actually becomes really good for us because we're learning limits that are out there. Limit of where we end and others begin, the limits of what we can pursue, the limits of what we can endure. In that book, Boundaries, that I quoted earlier, here's the last quote I want to read to you from Drs. Cloud and Townsend. They said this: just because your child is in pain does not mean that something bad is happening. Something good may be occurring, such as his coming to grips with reality for the first time. And this encounter with reality is never a happy experience. I love that. I don't know why I love that, but I do. But if you can empathize with the pain, that's where I need to grow, and hold on to the limit, your child will internalize that limit and ultimately get over the protest. This is the law of the universe. Frustration and painful moments of discipline help a child to learn to delay gratification, one of the most important character traits a person can have. Did you catch that? One of the most important character traits a human being can have is this ability to delay gratification. Suffering is really normal. Everybody's going to experience it in our lives. We try to maybe help our kids avoid unnecessary suffering, but there is going to be suffering in their life. The question is, will they learn how to suffer well? And they'll learn that from us. Have we learned how to suffer well in this? Right?
Right. And you know, it's tough because I think that we have something in us, an internal kind of driving thing that we really want to protect our kids from pain. And that's good, whereas it's the kind of pain we're supposed to protect them from. And so here's where I think God leaves it up to us and helps us and wants us to learn and gives us discernment so that we can discern where the pain is coming from. And, you know, is this the kind of pain that they're experiencing that's actually going to be helpful and help them grow? And, you know, it's okay because it's delayed gratification. It's going to build character in their life. Or is this the kind of pain that comes from they, you know, have some real needs or trauma or hurt in their life that I need to help them through as a parent? So kids aren't really able to verbalize that well what they have the need for and if it's, you know, good kind of pain or the bad kind of pain. So as parents, you get to help build that into their life. And sometimes their behavior is legitimate. They're trying to send a message, I'm not okay. I'm not okay. There can be loss in their life or trauma or maybe abuse somewhere, or it could be medical or physical or,
like,
you know.
I just think, like, with an infant, every time that they're acting out, it's always because of a need.
There is always a need there. And that's what you're in their life for, is to help them discern, you know, what kind of discomfort is this? Is this the kind of comfort that's going to build character, or is this something that I need to intervene as a parent because there's truly something wrong going on here? So that's a key thing for us as parents to learn. If we want to not stop that character building process, we're going to have to ease into and let them feel some discomfort. And that's hard. And one of the things I think that confuses this is that we have our own pain, don't we? Like, we have our own stuff going on. And so, you know, all professionals would agree that, you know, whatever you bring into this relationship as a parent is going to affect your parenting. And we have to pursue some of our own healing at times. And we don't usually have all of that together at the point that we have children and we're starting to parent. And so
because we all have
our junk in the trunk.
Oh, I love
I like
that
to
line.
Say. Yeah.
And that cracks me up.
It's basically like what you bring with you, the stuff that you've gone through, the life trauma that you've gone through and what's attached to it, and how maybe you weren't in a safe place. You didn't have the right people around you, or you couldn't be completely real about what was going on or what you've suffered from. So you didn't have the resources to deal with it at the time. So it kind of gets swept under the rug, you know. And then you're walking through life, and you can't even walk across the room without tripping over a bump in the carpet as a parent. And you can't figure out why, you know, you get angry at this itty-bitty little kid that, you know, doesn't even know any better. And, you know, all the time, and see moms or dads saying, I'm so angry and I don't know why. Hmm. You know, what's going on under there? What's the root of that? And how can you very quickly pay attention to it? And that's the key, I think. You know, most important thing isn't what you do as much as who you are. Your kids are looking to see who you are. How do you react? How do you respond? And it's not that you can't make mistakes, because I think making mistakes and then learning how to come back and say you're sorry is just as valuable to kids as well, to learn how to reconcile ourselves to each other in relationship and to God. But if you're in crisis as a parent, you need to get help, and you need to get some things in order and structure, the structure and order of your life, so that you can bring some order and structure to your kid's life. And I think to try to ignore that is just going to breed all kinds of things that you don't really want in your relationship. So another part of this kind of whole pain picture is that whatever you've gone through as a parent or as a child and you haven't dealt with it, you're going to project that generally onto your kids. And it's going to be hard to separate your pain from their pain. So, for instance, what might feel like to a toddler is discomfort or a little bit uncomfortable, to a mother who has this tragic, you know, unhealed thing in her past, could feel like an all-out trauma. Or, you know, having a teenager who has some anxiety or discomfort about the first day of school or whatever could feel like a panic attack to a father who, you know, was ridiculed by other teens on the first day of school, and he's projecting that onto his teen. So sometimes our kids aren't in as much trouble as we think, but we're kind of dumping our stuff onto their life and saying, well, if this happens, then surely they must be, you know, dying. And so, you know, just separating our pain from their pain is really helpful in that. A good example would be like if you had suffered as a child with some severe kind of abandonment issues, and you just really struggle with that as an adult, and you always feel left, you always feel unwanted or abandoned or traumatized by those kinds of feelings, and you struggle with that as an adult. Well, the first time that it's date night, and, you know, you've got a little 18-month-old kid that you're leaving with grandma and grandpa or babysitter, and they start to cry, and the crying of that child, like, cuts you so deep and goes to that place of abandonment in you, you're going to say, forget this, honey, we can't go out because I don't want to abandon this child. And so you're not going to be able to separate that, no, you're not abandoning your child by going on a date night. In fact, that's probably healthy for your marriage. And your child's not abandoned. They're being well taken care of, and you're there as a loving parent every day. And so just learning how to not project that pain that you have in your life and some of the unhealed stuff onto our kids can be really helpful, because we need to let them feel some pain in order to build character in their life, the good kind of pain that actually does that, the delayed gratification. And then I think lastly, Michael, just that one of the things that's kind of a bit tricky for us as parents is that some of us use our kids to get our own needs met. And, you know, you see this maybe oftentimes you'll see a mother who's literally best friend in her life is her teenage daughter. And she might talk about things even about her husband with a teenage daughter that really aren't appropriate for that teenage daughter or her relationship with her own father. So it affects negatively the marriage, it affects the father-daughter relationship, it affects the mother-daughter relationship. And, you know, simply because this mother is lonely and doesn't have any friends and is using her child to meet that need. And so I think to be completely honest with ourselves, you know, am I using my kids in any way to make myself feel okay?
I saw that. I coached soccer with our children for years and years and years, and I saw it in myself, but I also saw it in lots of parents on the sidelines. You know, that they were using their kids' success or failure in soccer to try to meet their own needs and really projecting their own stuff on those kids.
Or even if, you know, your kid is good at something, you think you're a better parent. You know, it's your achievement. So their failures being your failures, their successes being your successes, and, you know, just using that kind of stuff in your kids' lives to either give yourself a pat on the back, to feel okay about yourself, and, you know, just... It's just dysfunctional, and it's time to start to learn to be honest about that and say, what I really need to do is draw close to Jesus and let him meet my needs, let him be the one, because it's a reversed role for kids to have parents who are somehow depending on them. The children are supposed to be able to depend on the parents, and so it's very confusing, and it takes away a childhood, and you can't parent very well because you're so afraid that if you are, going to say no to a child. You're going to break that flow of relationship, and you're not going to get your needs met if your kid is mad at you. So you end up just, you know, I mean, that's really how we end up with a lot of spoiled or, you know, spoiled kids, because we're just giving them everything because we're so afraid we're not going to feel loved by our child. And so it just affects our ability to parent well.
Absolutely. So that's what we got, huh? That's it. That's all three areas that we have time to cover today. Come tune in next week. No, I'm just joking. So here's what we'd like to do. We'd like kind of to move it from us talking about this stuff to actually praying for you guys. So if you're a parent here today, we'd like to invite you to stand up. We'll get to everybody here in just a minute, but for those of you that are parents, why don't you stand up? And what we want to do is we just want to pray over you and bless you. We especially want to pray for dads today, and so we'll do that as well. And just ask that God would bless you, and then also just really give you everything that you need to be the mom or the dad, to be the parent that he has called and created you to be. None of us got into this with any experience, but holding on to Jesus, he can really give us absolutely everything that we need. So let me begin by praying. Heavenly Father, thank you for just these moms and dads here today. And thank you that, you know, you knew better than us that we were ready and that we can do this. And you've given us these kids really as a gift. And so, Father, I ask that you would give us just a deep appreciation for our children. God, would you give us a deep appreciation for who they are, for the gifts that they have, for the way that you have created them. And then I ask for a tenacity in every single one of us to hold on to you, to not let go of you, to listen to what you want to do in our kids' lives. God, would you give us wisdom and discernment? Would you show us every step of the way exactly what you're doing? And Lord, we give you all of our mistakes, all the ways that we've blown it, pretty much every day. Lord, we give you those things. We want to own those things, but we don't want to necessarily continue down that same path. And so, Lord, bring healing, bring forgiveness, bring great joy over our families and our kids today. Just bring great joy.
And Lord, I just ask that you would, even today, as each one of these men stand before you, I ask, God, that you would pour out and impart to them just even more of the father heart of God so that they can be the father that they want to be and they long to be to their children. God, would you help them just as they walk in your footsteps, Lord, just to be deeply rooted in relationship with you so that you can give them what they need to be the kind of father that would rightly reflect who you are and your fathering of us, Lord, so their families can be whole and just have Jesus in the center. Would you give them your heart today? And we ask for your blessing on them. We ask that they would feel even your favor on them today as dads.
That's right.
God, would you help our families become more and more Christ-centered and bring peace to our families and make those things right that aren't quite right. Would you help us where we're lacking? We see these big gaps in our parenting, and we know that we struggle with some of these things. God, would you help us? Would you come, and would you fill in those blanks?
If I could have everyone else stand. One of the things that we love to do here at the Vineyard is just take time to pray for one another. And so the ministry team folks, you guys can go ahead and make your way right here to the front. We just want to take time to pray for one another and to kind of just offer some ministry. We all come today from lots of different places in our lives, lots of different, you know, highlights and really just stuff that's broken our heart. And I believe that Jesus wants to meet us today. And so what we're going to do, these guys are going to play some worship for a little bit. We're going to have some ministry team folks up here in the front. And we would just love to pray for whatever's going on in your life. And so if these three reality areas, if they kind of, you know, kind of stood out, the character issues that we talked about, embracing reality or taking responsibility or experiencing pain, if those things, if God's dialed something up in your life today, you know, along those lines, I just encourage you to let somebody pray for you. And if you're a parent here today and you're really struggling or things just feel out of control, man, we would love to pray with you. And so just come up here into the front as they lead us in worship, and we'd love to do that. Other than that, thank you for coming today to the Vineyard. God bless you guys, and have a great rest of the weekend.